House says a stronger U.S. military presence in Eastern Europe and severe economic harms will await Russia if it moves to invade Ukraine. China says the U.S. will fail to disrupt the Winter Olympics and warns that a diplomatic boycott will only result in a loss of moral authority. Plus, Israel launches several missiles into a port city in Syria. The details just ahead. Thanks for joining us. Rhetoric ratcheting up between the U.S. and Russia, just hours ahead of a meeting between their leaders. Washington now says that Moscow will have to prepare for a stronger U.S. military presence in Eastern Europe, should it move to attack Ukraine. The senior White House official says Washington would give a positive response to Eastern European allies requesting additional U.S. troops and military hardware to counter any threat from Russia. He also says Russia will face severe economic consequences in case of invading Ukraine. Kremlin says it is not expecting any significant breakthrough in the upcoming talks between President Vladimir Putin and his U.S. counterpart, Joe Biden. The two leaders are set to hold a video call in the coming hours for a conversation that will include several issues. The White House says it's concerned over the Russian military buildup near Ukraine, warning that massive sanctions are on the way. Moving on with the news, the Indian Foreign Secretary has confirmed that Russia has begun delivering long-range S-400 ground-to-air missile system to New Delhi, despite U.S. sanctions threat. Harshvardhan Shringlangsa said that supplies of S-400 would continue. He made the announcement after Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi held talks with the visiting Russian President Vladimir Putin in New Delhi. The deal for the Russian missile system, worth more than $5 billion, was signed in 2018. But Washington has threatened sanctions against India over the agreement under a 2017 U.S. law. The legislation is aimed at deterring countries from buying Russian military hardware. India, which is a strategic U.S. ally, needs the Russia S-400 missile system to modernize its armed forces. The U.S. diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing is drawing an angry response from China, with its foreign ministry warning that Washington will pay a price for its mistakes. The ministry says Washington's plot to disrupt the international event will fail and that Beijing is prepared to take countermeasures. It warned that the decision would lead to a loss of U.S. moral authority and credibility. The State Department has said that U.S. government officials will not be attending the Games because of alleged human rights violations. The decision, though, will not affect American athletes who will still compete in the Games. The standoff over the Olympics is adding to a long list of disputes between China and the U.S., including trade, Taiwan, the South China Sea, and the COVID origins. Israel carries out fresh air raids on Syria, targeting the port city of Latakia several times. Syrian defense systems have intercepted several missiles. No casualties have been reported in the incident. Our Damascus correspondent, Mohammed Ali, joined us earlier with more on the attack.
At about 1:45 a.m. local time here in Syria, explosions were heard in the governorate of Latakia. Later on, about 1:50 a.m., the Syrian state media confirmed that there has been an Israeli attack in which Israel attacked the vicinity of the port of Latakia. We still don't know if there were any casualties. Definitely, there are some, of course, material damages over there. The Syrian state media also said that Syria's air defenses were able to intercept most of the enemy missiles and shoot them down. However, it seems that some Israeli missiles did hit the vicinity of the port of Latakia, because some images were published by locals on the internet showing some smoke rising and coming out from the vicinity of the port of Latakia.
Saudi Arabia has carried out fresh airstrikes on the Yemeni capital Sana'a as part of the kingdom's intensified onslaught against its southern neighbor. There have been no reports on the possible casualties or material damage. The attacks are the latest in a bout of Saudi airstrikes on Yemen. Saudi warplanes have conducted over 130 strikes on Sana'a and other major Yemeni cities over the past 5 days. In response to the Saudi escalation, Yemeni armed forces carried out a retaliatory operation deep inside the kingdom hours ago. Political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti says the U.S. funds and provides logistics for Saudi Arabia in its war in Yemen.
And today Saudi has conducted the four airstrikes, two on Jerban area south of Sana'a, and one airstrike is reported that hit Sana'a airport, and one airstrike have targeted the Atan mountain. Most of those areas, Saudi has been targeting them with hundreds of airstrikes from the beginning of the war, but I think that the Saudi actually that they are showing that they will continue targeting Sana'a city, targeting Yemeni civilians, despite all those announcements from the United States that they are not will not continue to support Saudi Arabia or sell weapons. But we see on the other hand that the Saudi is still getting all type of equipment from United States. As Saudi is losing the war, even though we have seen the latest condemnation from many countries toward the latest attack against Saudi Arabia about 5 hours ago, even though there isn't any report of a single civilian casualty. But on the other hand, we see when Saudi conducted any airstrike on Yemen, when they kill civilians, they have killed more than 18,000 Yemeni civilians, most of them children. We haven't seen a single condemnation, neither from the United States or UK or France or any other country, and as well the United Nations.
Israel has finally released a Palestinian inmate who was on a hunger strike for 131 days in protest at his detention without charge. His release is widely viewed as yet another victory for Palestinians against the Israeli regime. Mona Kandil reports from the West Bank.
After a long hunger strike that lasted for 131 days to protest against his detention without charge or trial, Palestinian prisoner Kaid Al-Fasfous has been finally freed. The Israeli authorities released Al-Fasfous from the Israeli hospital of Barzilai, where he was held for subsequent worsening of his health condition because of his hunger strike. He arrived first at his hometown Doura village in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. Then he headed to the grave of later President Yasser Arafat in Ramallah. He sent a message to the other prisoners to remain steadfast, reminding them that gaining rights and liberty are only achieved through fighting.
As I did it, my brothers who are on hunger strike will do it. It was not an easy experience at all. Me and the other prisoners went through difficult days and circumstances. We had been beaten, oppressed, and held in solitary confinement, and had been transferred frequently from one prison to another.
Israel arrested Al-Fasfous in October 2020, and it was not his first detention. He was arrested several times in the past, but this time he was held under administrative detention without charge or trial. Last month, the Israeli prison authorities decided to end his administrative detention and release him. The Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs has appraised Al-Fasfous' victory and appraised his encouragement, describing it as defeating the occupation's authorities, and it hoped that the remaining hunger-striking prisoners, on top of them Hisham Abu Hawash, who has been protesting for 111 days, would also achieve victory.
It's a victory for Al-Fasfous and for the prisoners' movement, as well as for all of us. We praise Al-Fasfous's stance. He refused to retreat despite his deteriorating health condition and bravely insisted on his demand.
Administrative detention involves no indictment, no revelation of confidential evidence, and no trial or judgment of the accusations against the prisoner, as Israel holds over 4,500 Palestinian prisoners. Hundreds of them are languishing behind bars without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. Kaid Al-Fasfous is free today after achieving a tremendous victory following 131 days of his hunger strike. His battle definitely gives other Palestinian prisoners held under Israel's administrative detention a glimmer of hope to go on with their actions and their fight for justice. Mona Kandil in front of the grave of late President Yasser Arafat, occupied Ramallah.
Iran's president has reiterated his country's support for peace and security in the Persian Gulf region. Ebrahim Raisi said that Israel is pursuing its, quote, sinister goals in the region and turning every foothold into a tool for expansionism. He made the remarks at a meeting with the visiting UAE National Security Advisor. Raisi said that friendly relations with neighboring countries are Iran's priority in its foreign policy. He stressed that nothing should hinder boosting cooperation among regional countries. The Iranian president insisted that bilateral relations in the region must not be influenced by outside powers. The UAE's Sheikh Tahnoon bin Zayed Al Nahyan hailed the meetings as a turning point in ties between the two countries. He said that his country is ready to expand bilateral cooperation with Iran. Iran says the draft proposals it has offered to the participants in the Vienna talks don't cover anything beyond the terms of the 2015 nuclear deal, also known as the JCPOA. Hossein Amir Abdollahian has called on the other parties to stop what he called playing the blame game. He says he has told the European Union's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, that reports about Iran enriching uranium at a 90% purity level are false. Iran's top diplomat was referring to critical comments from the British, French, German, and U.S. officials about the proposals Iran offered during the seventh round of talks that went into a recess on Friday. Tehran and the remaining signatories to the accord are expected to pick up where they left off in Vienna later this week. Afghanistan is being hit by drought, economic and displacement crises deteriorating day by day, with the World Bank donors expected to meet soon. The Afghan people have pinned hopes on them to take some practical steps to alleviate the financial problems of the war-torn country. Rahmatullah Bhagwan reports from Kabul.
The World Bank spokesman had announced that donors to the Afghanistan Reconstruction Trust Fund have agreed to decide about the transfer of funds to humanitarian aid agencies by December 10th. In the meantime, people in Afghanistan complaining about the ongoing crisis in their country call on the donors to let the flow of aid and unfreeze the blocked assets.
I expect the donors to stick to their promises. What are they waiting for? We have lots of problems, including poverty and unemployment. Everyone will starve if no aid is sent to Afghanistan.
The world countries have always said that they are after helping us. The situation is worsening as the winter is around the corner. We hope that the World Bank donors help us get out of this disaster by sending humanitarian aid.
Economical experts say that however the aid would be helpful, but the international community, in cooperation with the Taliban, must seek other stable approaches for Afghanistan's economy, rather than relying on temporary programs.
The Taliban should show flexibility against the international community's request to gain trust so that the aid could be handed over to the new government in Afghanistan. The transfer of the frozen assets can be very fruitful amid the current poverty that the Afghans are struggling with.
This comes as the UN bodies and aid agencies are calling for more urgent assistance as winter bites. World Food Program says that it needs $2.6 billion to ramp up life-saving support to reach 24 million people in 2022. The U.S. has frozen nearly $10 billion in assets of Afghanistan as it tries to keep the Taliban away from accessing the money. The U.S. sanctions on the Taliban have led to a wave of hunger and poverty in Afghanistan, pushing a large portion of the people to the brink of a catastrophe. Afghans now hope that donor countries agree to extend a helping hand. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Indonesia is reporting more fatalities from a dramatic volcanic eruption that has left a trail of destruction on the Java Island. Authorities say 34 people have been killed and scores more injured in the aftermath of the volcanic activities. Rescue teams are searching for 17 people who are still unaccounted for. Some 3,700 people are staying in shelters waiting for aid. Mount Semeru caught local residents off guard when it roared into life on Saturday, spewing ashes and thick plumes of smoke. The scale of devastation appears to be massive, as new aerial footage shows deserted villages with heavily damaged homes. Semeru is one of Indonesia's nearly 130 active volcanoes. It erupted earlier this year, but caused no casualties. EU employment ministers have agreed to take measures to protect wage levels in the bloc, as workers and employers are facing growing uncertainty due to economic pressures. New data shows the gap between the rich and the poor in the EU is growing. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
According to a study just published by the European Trade Union Confederation, wage inequality has grown in a majority of EU countries, 14 out of the 27 member states to be precise. The report was released to coincide with a meeting of EU employment ministers. They've agreed on a wage directive designed to protect those on low incomes.
The message coming today on the 6th of December from Brussels is a very positive, encouraging message, especially to those who are still in work poverty.
Millions of people in the EU are working in precarious jobs. Most of them are young adults.
A job well done requires adequate and just pay. This concerns the fundamental respect of people in their work. One of our priorities under the Slovenian presidency was high-quality job creation.
Although the new directive was passed here in the Council, Hungary and Denmark voted against it, while Germany and Austria abstained. Analysts say it's clear there will never be an EU-wide minimum wage. Pay systems and economies vary greatly. For example, currently, the minimum wage in Bulgaria is €312 a month. In Luxembourg, it is €2,142. Employers are afraid to invest at present due to all of the unknowns surrounding COVID-19, high energy prices and political uncertainty in some EU nations.
Businesses want certainty. They can't have certainty, but they would like a bit of predictability for investment reasons in particular. And they don't have that at the moment because of these issues that you just mentioned. And they don't know what's around the corner.
Disaster is around the corner for the EU project, experts warn, if the bloc's leaders continue in their failure to deliver greater social justice. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, today we're going to continue our discussion about Imam Khomeini's views on the armed forces. Please stay with us. The late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes in his testament, "In Iran, where this miracle of the age, the Islamic Revolution, was worked by the people, The committed armed forces and the pure and patriotic commanders had a significant share. And today, as Saddam's war that has been imposed by the order and support of America and other superpowers has faced a political and military defeat by the invading Ba'athist army and its powerful supporters and their lackeys, it is again the armed forces and the new law enforcement forces, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps and popular forces, who created this great honor in the front with the unsparing support of the nation. They made Iran proud, and the internal mischief and plots that had been mobilized by the puppets affiliated to the East and the West to overthrow the Islamic Republic were thwarted by the able hands of the younger generation of the Islamic Revolutionary Committees, the Basij Volunteer Forces, the police, with the help of the brave people. It is the same dear selfness, younger generation, who stay awake at night so that their families rest calmly. May God bless them. The founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, continues, I recommend kindly to all armed forces, in the end of the life of this world, just as they have been loyal, to be firmly loyal to Islam, which is the only religion of independence and freedom, and Almighty God has invited all to the lofty human status with its light of guidance. It is Islam that rescues you, your country, and your nation from the strain of dependence and affiliation to the powers who do not want you, except for their slavery, and keep your dear country and nation backward and the consumption market and under the shameful oppression. Prefer noble human life, even with problems, to the shameful life of slavery of foreigners, even if it is with animal welfare. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes further in his testament, My brotherly recommendation in the final steps of my life to the armed forces generally is that, O dear ones, who love Islam and continue self-sacrifice in the front and all over the country with the love of meeting God, be vigilant and alert as the political players and the West-toxicated and East-toxicated professional politicians and stealthy, mysterious hands have focused the sharp weapon of treachery and crime from every side towards you, dear ones, more than any other group, and they want to exploit your dear ones, who have made the revolution victorious and revived Islam with your sacrifices to topple the Islamic Republic. And they want to separate you from Islam, and they want you to separate from the nation, and they don't want you to serve the country, and they want to throw you in the lap of one of the two world-devouring powers, and they want to nullify your efforts and sacrifices by political deception, tricks, in the Islamic and national form. Imam Khomeini then refers to the backwardness of Iran, saying, After this, much of artificial backwardness to the great industries of the foreign countries, our need is an undeniable reality. This does not mean that we should be dependent on one of the superpowers in the advanced sciences. The government and the army should make effort to send committed students to the countries which have great advanced industries, while they're not colonialists and exploiters, and they should refrain from sending the students to America and the Soviet Union and other countries which are in the direction of these two poles. Perhaps, God willing, one day will come that these two powers will come to their senses and march in the path of humanity and humanitarianism and respect other people's rights. Or, God willing, the downtrodden of the world and the vigilant nations and committed Muslims will put them in their places. Thank you. founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes further in his testament, "Know that as long as you extend your hand to others in advanced industries and spend your life in begging, the power of innovation and advancement in inventions would not flourish within you. And you saw clearly that in this short period after the economic sanctions, those who considered themselves unable to make anything and were disappointed of driving factories put their thoughts into action and met many needs of the army and factories themselves. And this war, the economic sanction and expulsion of the foreign experts, were a divine gift which we were negligent of. Now, if the government and the army sanction the goods of the world devourers and increase their effort in the way of innovation, it is hoped that the country will be self-sufficient and will be saved from begging the enemy." The late Imam Khomeini continued by saying, "We saw that many factories and advanced tools like aircrafts and other industrialized goods, which were not thought to be started by Iranian specialists, and all hands were extended towards the West and the East so that their specialists would start them. As a result of the economic sanction and the imposed war, our dear young people have made the needed parts and supplied them in lower prices and have proved that we can if we want to."
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Israeli violations of occupied Palestinian territories is a phenomenon that occurs almost daily, but the violations have been so incessant that it looks like the world has become numb to it. In the latest aggression, Israeli forces fatally shot a Palestinian man at a checkpoint. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why Israel continues to get away with it, and whether the U.S. support for Israeli aggression is a reason for Israel's continued violation of international law and the crimes that it is committing.
Palestinians and rights group condemned Jerusalem execution. OHCHR shocked by Israel's killing of Palestinian man in Jerusalem. Israeli forces raid house of Palestinian man shot dead over alleged attack. Israeli forces attack Palestinian farmers and fishermen in besieged Gaza. These are some of the headlines in the past few days that show not a day goes by in the occupied territories without the Israeli regime's atrocities against Palestinians amid a deafening silence of the United Nations and other international bodies. In the latest aggression, Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man point-blank at a checkpoint near the occupied West Bank city of Tulkarm. The regime claims the Palestinian was gunned down after he rammed a vehicle into an Israeli guard. Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas, have hailed the attack against occupying forces. They say it represents the natural reaction of the Palestinian nation against Israeli crimes and the ongoing occupation. The fatal shooting was the second such incident in the past week. On Saturday, the Israeli forces killed a young Palestinian man in occupied Al-Quds, claiming he had tried to stab an officer after wounding a man. Israel often uses stabbing as a pretext to kill Palestinians at close range. The footage of the cold-blooded killing, which showed Israeli forces shooting the man at least twice while he was already lying on the ground, triggered widespread condemnation from Palestinian officials, the UN, and rights groups. The UN Human Rights Office said it was shocked by the incident.
Extrajudicial killings such as this are the consequences of the regular resort to lethal force by well-armed and well-protected Israeli military personnel against Palestinians, and the almost total lack of accountability for killings and injuries of Palestinians by Israeli forces.
Not even Palestinian children and teenagers are immune to Israeli brutality. Last month, the regime forces killed 14-year-old Amjad Abu Sultan in the West Bank city of Bethlehem. His body was seized by the regime and was not released to his family until days later. Israeli troops have on numerous occasions been caught on camera for the brutal killing of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, with the videos going viral and sparking international condemnation. However, the international community's inaction has emboldened the regime to press ahead with its extensive use of lethal force against Palestinians. Israel's atrocities are not limited to brutal killings of Palestinians. A UN report last month revealed that the number of Palestinian structures confiscated or demolished in the occupied territories has increased by 21% in 2021 compared to last year. Palestinians say the move is part of the regime's land grab policy aimed at paving the way for its settlement expansion. Israel has sped up its settlements construction in the occupied territories despite international condemnation. Last month, the regime approved thousands more settler units near Al-Quds in defiance of international law. Israel's policies have not only exposed the UN, but also the countries self-proclaiming as human rights defenders. On top sits the United States, that has voted some 50 UN Security Council resolutions critical of Israel in the past four decades, and actually gives a green light to the regime to fulfill its occupation agenda and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
Well, guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have Palestinian journalist, writer, and activist Khaled Barakat, who joins us from Vancouver. Also joining us, Palestinian scientist and author Mazin Kumsaya, who joins us from Bethlehem.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both. Let me first start with you, if I may, Khaled Barakat. It's going to be a little bit lengthy, but I have to highlight it. It comes from a source by the name of PCHR, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. You may have heard of it. It comes out with weekly reports of what happens in the occupied territories. Week after week, these reports come out. This is this week, 25th of November to 1st of December. I'm going to give the short version because it would take too much time. Excessive use of force, 11 Palestinians shot and wounded, including six children, seven Palestinian fishermen arrested, two fishing boats confiscated, Israeli forces shooting reported against five fishing boats, 156 Israeli forces incursions, including in the occupied East Jerusalem, 80 civilians to have been injured. You have demolitions that have happened, two homes self-demolished, another demolished by the Israeli forces, and another order placed for 58 homes. It was denied. And then you have settlements, Israel announcing plans to build 2,000. Every week, you have similar type reports. So when you see this, what do you think? Because many parts of the world don't realize that this is happening on such a scale on a weekly basis.
Yes, these are Israeli crimes and atrocities.
that is covering in your report the West Bank and Gaza and what people, Palestinian people, have been facing, you know, on a daily basis. There is an international complicity here, and the United States is absolutely complicit in these crimes, because what they do is not just that they support Israel, but they also provide protection for Israel on an international scene. Let's remember that most of these killings are targeting Palestinian children and youth between the age of 14 and 23. And many times the Israeli crimes against people in Gaza go unseen, and also not to count what Israel does on a daily basis against Palestinians inside Israel in 1948 occupied territories. Now, let's remember also that even the Israeli representative in the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, who is a right extreme minister, he used to be in charge of the Israeli internal policing and also on the prison authority, and he personally is involved in killing young Palestinians, and he dared to speak to the international community, and the UN is hosting basically a war criminal. Instead of arresting this criminal, they provide an international arena for him. These crimes, one of the reasons that especially the one that it's caught in videos, that's what people see. Sure. Very similar to what the U.S. police do on a daily basis against black youth, but we only see the one that is recorded on a video. But these crimes happen on a daily basis.
Sure. Well, let's break this down a little bit here, and let me ask you a direct question, Mazen Kumsay, if I may. Noam Chomsky, I'm sure you've heard of him. Intellectual and philosopher, in a sense, he has said, without U.S. aid, Israel would not be killing, I'm quoting him, without U.S. aid, Israel would not be killing Palestinians en masse. What do you think?
Well, the U.S. government has mentioned my Khalid is complicit. It's actually a partner in crime. I would go further to say that U.S. foreign policy and U.S. aid to Israel is guided, of course, by the Zionist lobby that's in Washington that pushes around the U.S., gets it involved in wars in the Middle East that cause trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money, and that's why the U.S. has a deficit and has a debt that's now reached over $23 trillion thanks to these endless wars. But the U.S. has been built basically on these wars, and in its history had only like 20 years of peace, when most of its history has been a history of either directly involved in war or supporting countries that regimes that engage in wars, like Saudi Arabia and Yemen, or Israel on Palestine. This is what they do. That's the nature of this U.S. regime, if I may use that word also, because that's what the nature of a colonial system is. And Israel is a daughter of the colonial system. It's a daughter of the British colonial system, and then taken over, basically adopted by the American colonial system. Mm-hmm. So it behaves in a very similar way in terms of its genocidal policies in these countries, in developing countries.
Well, I need to also have your take on this, if I may, Khaled Barakat, the U.S. support. The U.S. supports Israel, but it supports it in a way that it's almost unconditional. It's just there no matter what Israel is doing. How responsible do you think the U.S. is for Israel to feel this impunity?
Well, just like what Dr. Mazen Kumsiya said, I mean, Israel is basically an U.S. project today. Since 1956, when the United States entered the region, inherited the old colonial system of Britain and France, basically they inherited the area with Israel as well. I mean, we know that U.S. involvement in supporting the Zionist movement is long before 1956, but in that year, especially the Suez Canal crisis and the United States entering the region with, you know, full force, and Israel became literally a U.S. project. Every crime Israel commits against the Palestinian people, the United States is responsible. Britain, too, are responsible, and we see that instead of, you know, apologizing and admitting their crimes against the Palestinian people of establishing this colonialist racist regime in Palestine, they are trying to criminalize the Palestinian resistance. We saw that in the U.S. We see this, you know, today in Britain. And this war against the Palestinian people and the resistance of the Palestinians is absolutely orchestrated in Washington and Tel Aviv. And I wanted to stress, you know, on the issue of U.S. responsibility here, which means what the United States is also doing is trying to set an example that, you know, crimes could be committed against Arabs in the region, not just Palestinians, but also in Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere, right, without going, you know, punished or any kind of accountability.
All right. I was very taken aback, if I may ask you this, Muslim from Saya, about this critique that was leveled against the UN. And it came from a website by the name of UN Watch, which monitors UN actions against other entities and so forth. And it said, based on the findings, that the UN has condemned Israel in 3 resolutions. And this just happened in this, I guess, ruling that happened just days ago. Erases the Jewish connection to Judaism's holiest site is how they worded it. And this is the December 1 report. The UN General Assembly, it said, adopted 3 resolutions targeting Israel. And it said it was part of the total 14 resolutions being adopted over the next month that target it, with only 5 on the rest of the world. And very angry at why the UN is zooming in on Israel. Well, it's ironic that it would come out and say that it's being targeted for the violations that it's conducting. Then doesn't that put into a question why the UN cites all these illegal actions, but yet nothing happens? And then you have Israel that says, why are you picking on me?
Yes, I mean, since 1948, 100,000 Palestinians have been killed. Over 800,000, 900,000 have been injured. Over 1 million have been imprisoned. And every single human rights organization in the world and the United Nations Human Rights Commissions, various human rights resolutions in the UN have all, every single one of them, even Israeli human rights organizations like B'Tselem, have reported these violations, and everybody knows these violations are happening, but Israel gets out basically with impunity for these things, as pointed out earlier. Now, why is that? Because Israeli colonial interests intersect strongly with American hegemonic interests in the Middle East. And this is also precisely why, and I'd like us to take a few moments to think about the not just the negative aspects of what's happening from the U.S. and Israel, but the positive aspects of what the local people are doing. That is precisely why resistance is growing around the world to these activities of the U.S. and Israel. It's the same situation as happened in South Africa under apartheid. It was a galvanizing movement around the world with boycott, divestment, sanctions, and other actions to target the regime of South Africa under apartheid. And the reason we did that with South Africa, and the reason we're now doing it with Palestine, because in both situations, this apartheid colonialist regime exposed the hypocrisy of Western world, exposed the hypocrisy of speaking about human rights by, for example, the Biden administration, while at the same time pumping billions of dollars to support the regimes that are devastating human rights around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, Khaled Barakat, can't mention or can't have this program not mention the Gaza Strip and the Palestinians there. Looking at the siege that began in the year 2007, 2021 is almost drawing to an end. It's almost unbelievable the way that they are surviving, if I can even use that word, survive, because that's what's happening there. And this is, again, under the watchful eye or unwatchful eye of the international community, seeing the way that this siege is affecting the lives there, from a lack of medicine, lack of food, to the, you name it, to all the difficulties there. Why is it that this particular situation is not paid attention to the way that it should and the way that it deserves?
Well, I mean, the siege is a war crime, and it goes against all international law and accords. Everyone knows that. This siege placed by Israel and the Egyptian regime together, and we see that, and the world sees that. But at the same time, Gaza is being targeted because in Gaza there is a strong Palestinian resistance. And what they want is the head of the resistance. They want the weapons of the resistance, and they want to break the will and the resistance of the Palestinian people in Gaza. When we talk about resistance in Gaza, we are talking about workers, fishers, farmers, teachers, not just military resistance. And so this popular Palestinian will that is confronting Israel, that is organizing for return to their homes in which they were displaced from, is met with besieging people, which is in a place, the largest prison in the world. Today, even Hamas have said publicly that the Egyptian regime is not meeting their responsibilities. I mean, when we talk about Egypt rule, and Israel is the enemy of the Palestinian people, but the Egyptian regime, this fascist regime led by Sisi and these generals, are also placing a heavy, measures against Palestinians in Gaza.
Sure. Well, in conclusion, I'd like to get your thoughts here, if I may, Mazen Kamzaya, on the Israel's so-called normalization of ties under what the U.S. Put forward through its former president, Donald Trump. How much legitimacy did that give Israel, not only in terms of Israel itself, but also for it to continue its violations and for the, Arab countries to look the other way?
Well, the normalization activities with this Zionist colonization started at the beginning of the Zionist colonization. There was always Arab leaders, including even, sadly to say, Palestinian leaders, who think that the best way to deal with the situation is to accept the status quo and accept the hegemony of the Zionist project in Palestine. And I would go even further by saying that Israel would not have lasted one day without this normalization activities by the Arab regimes. Israel is not very strong. It's only made strong by, number one, Western support, which we talked about, and number two, by the normalization activities and basically collusion of some Arab leaders. Sad to say also, even the Palestinian Authority here in where I am now in the West Bank is colluding with this and supporting Israel through security coordination. And even just a few days ago or a week ago, there were some Israelis entered Ramallah, settlers, and they were protected by the Palestinian security forces. So unfortunately, this is the reality that the people have to face. And as pointed out earlier, there is the positive reality of resistance that's still happening in all its forms.
Okay, very well. We're going to unfortunately have to end it there. It was great talking to you both, Palestinian journalist, writer, and activist Khaled Barakat. Thank you from Vancouver, And from Bethlehem, Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Kumsaya, thank you for your comments. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. It was great having you on board. From Mikhail Tavwai, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio This is your host Musa Al-Bahadili and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and esteemed guest Sheikh Nur Muhammad who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum Dear Sheikh, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sheikh, because we're going to need your help to answer today's question. Our question today is a quote attributed to the famous actor Charlie Chaplin. Maybe our listeners have heard of him. Very famous from the 50s, 40s, I believe. And the quote is as follows. If you were born in Israel, then there's a high chance, high probability that you would have been a Jew. If you were born in Saudi Arabia, likewise, there would have been a high chance and probability that you would have been a Muslim. If you were born in Europe, again, there would have been a high probability that you would have been a Christian. And if you were born in Japan, then there is a high probability, again, that you have been a Shintoist. So it would seem that religion is an invention that is dependent on the geographical location that is determined for you when you are born. Therefore, why are people so engaged and caught up by this religion? That which is important are ethics, morals, and humanity, which is not related to a geographical location or to a time or specific place, which, of course, in contrast to what he believes religion is. So, dear Sheikh, what do we say to people who, of course, believe in this citation and support this argument?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم First of all, I totally agree, you know, I want to support the final statement of this person.
Right.
What matters is humanity and ethics. Really, exactly. It really is. And Islam is about humanity and ethics.
Yeah.
You see? We have a lot of verses of Noble Quran talking about the humanitarian aspect of the Islamic laws. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells people that you should, for example, وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا You should be benevolent to your parents.
Yeah,
okay?
For example.
You should be benevolent to orphans and needy people. And
your neighbors have rights on you.
Yes.
You got to respect them, treat them, ask about their health and wealth and so on and so on.
Yes. You know, some verses of Noble Quran, let me share وَعْبُدُ اللَّهِ وَلَا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا Worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and do not ascribe any partners to Him. وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا And be benevolent to your parents. وَبِذِ الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى And to your relatives and orphans. You know, how beautiful this verse. First of all, to priority, if you look at the priority.
Yes.
First of all, your what people who are closer to you.
Right.
First of all, your parents, because, and then we have relatives who are very close
your
to you.
Your family.
Your family
close
members.
To
yes. And after that, yatama, because it has more priority. Orphans.
Right.
Yeah. And then, well, masakin.
Poor
and
people.
To needy people. Yes, you're right. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that wal jari dhil qurba, close near neighbor.
Yes.
Who are neighbors who are near to you.
Right.
And what this near means, according to some narrations, 40, for example.
40 houses in all four directions. Some say 40 houses in a circle.
Yeah, you see how they counted to be considered to be right. Near neighbors. And then he said, wal jar al junub, and distant neighbor.
As
even
well.
Your distant neighbors. Okay? You should be benevolent to them.
Right.
And then was sahib bil jan, companion at your side. For example, some friends you have at your company, some people, I don't know, some people suddenly maybe you have some companionship of that person for maybe 2 minutes.
Right.
But
you meet
should
them.
Be yeah, you should be nice to them. You know?
Yeah.
These are very beautiful, but the practice of how to practice it maybe for some
that's
of
the difficult
it's
part.
Difficult part. Yeah. And wabn sabil, traveler. Some people that travel.
You meet on the road while you're traveling.
And that person, you know, maybe he or she missed his address and does not know where to go. You should right. Be benevolent to that person. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala after that said, "Inna Allah la yuhibbu man kana mukhtalan fakhura." Allah does not like arrogant and boastful people. You see? You should not be arrogant. These are all about humanity.
And akhlaq, morals.
Yes, morality and ethics. I don't think that more than that you can say about right. The morality and humanity. This is a real humanity. Of course, this is I shared with you, my dear listeners. It was only one verse of Noble Quran. We
one
have
verse.
Different verses of Noble
and
Quran.
And no narrations so far, because so many narrations about akhlaq.
How, you know, all human beings that are respected. They are وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ, which means we gave nobility to human being. He didn't say we gave
to
nobility to Muslim.
Yes. Every single human being.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, inshallah,
inshallah, you'll find your way. Imam Ali al-Sami says, if a person is not your brother in faith, then he's your equal in creation.
Yes,
right. And that's the essence of humanity and morals.
It doesn't matter whether you are in Africa, Europe, America.
Right. Or he's a kafir, or rather an infidel, or
infidel,
something.
Atheist, even atheist.
Atheist, yeah.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. We gave nobility to human being. Okay.
Right.
Or, for example, in another verse, he said, وَقُولُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنَا. Say, talk nicely to people.
Yeah, لِلنَّاسِ, to people, not
to
specific
all people.
People, all.
Yes, you should be respectful and to have nice treatment
right.
With them and nice behavior, decent behavior to them and so on. So I agree. But why I disagree with that person is
yeah,
about...
The last point we agree with.
Yes, you're right. But the first point that he mentioned
right.
Is about the, for example, the effect of society on people. To a certain extent, I accept that because
yeah.
There's no choice. To some extent... Society and environments, I mean,
very important.
It has some effect
yeah.
On you.
Yeah.
But it does not have total, you know, effect on people.
Right.
To some extent, it depends on your personality. If you have a strong personality and willpower, its affection is very few.
And if you have faith,
very low. Yes, you're
right.
But if you have weak personality and weak faith, as you said, maybe it has some to some extent. But after all, what matters is your own decision and your own choice.
And that's the important part.
Really, it's the importance. It depends on your choice. Because every human being, each and every human being, male or female, they have their willpower. It depends on
God given.
God given, yes. Al irada wal ikhtiyar. It is, which means willpower and what you choose.
Free
matters.
Choice.
Free choice. They are free choice. They have the free choice. They can choose good or bad. doing or not doing certain things.
That's the point of us being created as